This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Inflation. It is a story in the United States, in Europe, in the EU, and in the United Kingdom. I welcome Veronique de Rugy of the Mercatus Center to help me understand these discordant voices. This is Bloomberg reporting. Within these last hours, the Bank of England's main inflation hawk, Michael Saunders, said he sees advantages in waiting for more data on the Omicron variant before raising rates. That prompted investors to slash bets on a hike this month. In Europe, the more dovish ECB chief, Christine Lagarde, says Bloomberg, said a euro area rate rise next year is unlikely, but that still didn't stop money markets bringing forward bets on one to December 22 from February 23. And in the U.S., no comment from the Fed yet on weak U.S. jobs data reported in these last hours. But economists point out the report contains two surveys, one of employers and one of households. The latter showed employment surged by 1.14 million people and many came off the sidelines. That may help keep the Fed on track to tighten policy faster, end quote. You will all recall Mr. Powell in remarks of these last days has said that he is retiring the word transitory when it comes to inflation and that he is now on a course pending his return to the chairman of the Federal Reserve on a course to begin in a fashion tightening in 22. Veronique, a very good evening to you. I am lost in the fog of central banking. How to understand these different interpretations of the same fact table, the Omicron, the recovery, the pandemic, and the supply chain. Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, I think the best way to understand it is like while we have a global economy, each of these different countries face or territories face slightly different situation. I mean, there's more inflation in the U.S., than there is in Europe, so it explains why. I mean, the hype is what it is and what it's been in the U.S. That said, obviously, anything that happens in the U.S. could spread dramatically around the world, and they all have very different, you know, cultures. So, and the situation is always evolving. What I find pretty striking is actually that the Fed now is put in a position where it has admitted, on the one hand, that we have inflation, that to those who thought that the word transitory meant short-lived, it's an admission that no, it's not. We're retiring the word because it leads to that confusion. Inflation is not going to be short-lived. And so that's important. And yet, there's still no guidance as to what they will do. We know they're going to do something, but there's still no talk about really raising rates, only a promise of action. So I find it actually quite in line with what we've seen the last few months from the Fed, which is basically a real reluctance to really tell us exactly what they're thinking about. And it could be in part because of their framework, which puts so many different constraints on their behavior, such as, you know, filling the output gap, making sure we reach unemployment, trying to make sure that raising rates too fast or contracting the monetary contraction doesn't lead to a slowdown of the economy, which could then in turn affect disadvantaged American the most. These are a lot of constraints on the Fed, and I think it explained their silence.
The employment picture, let me choose one to because it's in the headlines. The employment picture is said on the one hand to be a disappointment in these last hours. The headline in the Wall Street Journal, U.S. added just 210,000 jobs in November. Now, Bloomberg mitigates that by saying there were a number of households added, but we'll stay with the word just. the markets have reacted to this in an unhappy fashion because this confuses everyone. It's a lack of clarity. Does that help the Fed make a decision about whether we're in a tightening environment or a loose money environment? I also mentioned the unknowns about the variant called Omicron.
No, I don't think it helps the Fed at all. I think it actually makes things harder. Listen, until now, we've had a full, we had a booming economy by a lot of standards. We are almost recovered, certainly in terms of GDP, nominal GDP, we're recovered. We're almost recovered in terms of real GDP. We have low unemployment, but we have still major labor shortages. We have all of this. Inflation was coming, and still the Fed thought it wasn't worth it to talk even about contraction. Now, they feel the pressure to start saying they're going to be talking to us and doing something. I mean, to be fair, they have started tapering in some ways, but they've started saying we're going to do more because it's inevitable now that there's so much pressure on them to acknowledge that there's inflation. But that unemployment picture is not what they want to see, even if unemployment is low. Understand that if part of their framework is really not only, you know, to maximize employment or to just minimize unemployment, but also to not do anything that may end up hurting disadvantaged American. This is just it's actually a very difficult position to be in.
What do you measure right now about legislation? Because you have written about parental leave or family leave or paid leave. You've written about the fact that that's part of the debate in the Build Back Better bill. It's one of the entitlements or so-called entitlements that are being offered. Is that outside of consideration when it comes to inflation, or is that part of the picture, this $2 or $3 or $4 or $5 trillion legislation?
Well, unfortunately, I actually think that we're not talking enough about the two together. I mean, there are a few people who are raising the fact that some of the component of this Build Back Better legislation may lead to more inflation. Maybe not so much because of the spending, even though I actually think that putting more money into people's pocket could have an important effect. But because it actually is going to exacerbate some of the labor supply issues and the shortage in labor. And part of it is because some of it is going to create more disincentive to go back to work. And so I wish we were actually talking more about the Build Back Better, the all of these programs' impact on the supply of labor, because that will have an impact on employment level, and then it will have an impact on the decision made by the Fed. Not to mention, actually, that Build Back Better costs a lot of money, and if the Fed feels the pressure that it has to, one, accommodate, and two, to not raise interest rate, so not to increase the cost of debt service, this could become a big problem in terms of inflation going forward.
Veronique DeRugy of the Mercatus Center commenting on these discordant voices about inflation. Europe, the UK, the United States. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.